Got it. You were all up too late last night, weren't you? Did this thing start too early this morning? Man, I usually get at least a chuckle out of that. And this is like, the room was like, boom. Okay, the icebreaker video did not work so well. Note to self. All right, that's me. Yeah, lots of cool stuff, some not so cool stuff. Actually, should be 27 years in law enforcement. Yikes. That's what happens when you start when you're 10. Nah, I wish. All right, here's what we're going to do today. I'm not here to impress with my resume, not going to bolster my fragile male ego, tell you how much an expert that I am, blah, 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 right? Not going to tell you how to live your lives or do your jobs. Not going to try and sell you anything, necessarily. I might try and sell you something, but usually that involves talking over beers. But I would like you to walk out of here today with something, gaining something, some positive information about court security. If not your general court security, at least your personal safety. All right, that's my disclaimer because I'm not an attorney, and I'm really happy about that. Okay, my wife's a paralegal. She gets to work with attorneys all the time. Don't get me wrong, I know some really nice attorneys. There's a few of them out there. Any attorneys in the room? Come on, don't be afraid. All right, there probably is one, but nobody wants to admit to it. If there's not, that's great. Even better.
What's that?
That's a swear jar. Every time someone swears, you put a quarter in it.
Who gets the money?
I don't know. We'll use it to buy something for the office, like a case of Bud Light or something.
F***ing awesome. F*** you, Bob.
F*** you, Jim.
Eric, I have a bag on line 3 for you.
Can I borrow your pen? Can I borrow your f***ing pen?
Will the owner of a white station wagon please go f*** herself?
We're going to go down there. And we're gonna f some ass. We're gonna f some ass. We're gonna s some
poop.
Doesn't count.
Shut the up!
I am so proud of you mother suckers. Here, here.
Alright, why do I show you that? Because I finally got you to laugh. Cool. Alright. You guys are loosening up now. Because I'm like them, except that I don't have a swear jar. 26 years in law enforcement, 12 years in SWAT, 3 years undercover working bikers and narcotics and vice, strip clubs and that kind of crap. I will slip and use a helping verb every now and again. I'm just saying it now. If I slip and use a helping verb, if you're offended, I am offering you my sincere apologies right now up front. If you're so offended that you feel you must leave, by all means, exit the door at the rear. Please go tattle the hope on me because it won't be the first time, probably won't be the last. So I have recently made it through an entire presentation with no F-bombs or S-bombs. Yes, so I'm working on that. And okay, here we go. All right, how many of you in here have been at work in a courtroom environment and had a bad thing happen? Something violent, something involving your defendants or your bailiffs, if you have them. Some of you probably don't. Some of you may. Judges, I see one hand. Anybody? Jameson, I'm good, brother. Thank you. It's working. The voodoo science so far. You know, Microsoft PowerPoints are voodoo science, right? Never, ever works the same way twice. And last time we taught this was a perfect example because none of the videos ran and the audio was screwed up and everything. Anyways. All right, so who in here has been a party to a violent act in their courtroom? All right, a few more hands going up right now. Hey, it's the old adage of when, not if. Okay? As a society, we are becoming more violent. Everybody saw what happened here recently in Albuquerque, New Mexico, right? What did we see? Anybody want to say it? 2 dead, 3 dead, 4 injured. St. Louis, we had a number killed. It's getting ridiculous. Bureau of Justice Statistics now tells us, notwithstanding law enforcement, we pull law enforcement out of this equation, 10% of all workplace fatalities are due to violent criminal acts. That ought to wake you up a little bit. So how do you define a disaster? I want you to look really closely at the plane that's upside down and been on fire. Because it's the same kind of plane as this one. If I'm in this plane and I'm seeing that, dude, you're going to get me off that plane one way or the other. That plane is not going up in the air with my big fat butt in it. It ain't going to happen. Ain't going to happen. So that's a real disaster. That's a disaster waiting to happen. Real waiting. Now, there's no audio to this one, so it's actually working right. I'm at the Home Depot. I got to put this thing away. It's going right. Oh. Yes. The question is that real? That answer is yes. And I gotta run this back. I only get an hour, and I always talk too much. You know, I always run over anyways. By the way, you're all held hostage until I'm done talking. You can't leave until I say so. I'm just saying, just letting you know. So I'm going to watch that again because I want to point something out to you. This guy knew, right? Just brilliant that this might become important someday and he'd become renowned on the internet. Just to add some dramatic intrigue, he slips and falls. Oh, no! That's those highly polished concrete floors. Is that a disaster? That's entitled My Last Day at Home Depot. I think that when he got up and ran, he just kept running. Out the door, just kept going. Yeah. Yes. All right, so what are we going to do today besides watch some fun videos and listen to me talk? I actually do want you to understand something. I want you to understand the nature of risk and how it impacts your work environment. I want you to understand that you can identify the causal factors that lead to workplace violence and how to avoid them, how to recognize them, how to mitigate them. Respond when those bad things happen. Okay? Some of you have been in court. Some of you have bailiffs. Some of you have probably seen your bailiffs have to wrestle with people, or worse, in court. How do you respond? This isn't a class for bailiffs. I teach that later on, and I'm much meaner and nastier, and I drop lots of F-bombs in that class because that's when I'm talking to cops. I need to get their attention. Okay, this is different. You guys do not have an expectation to go to the sounds of the gunfire should the gunfire occur, but how many people have ever been taught, what do you specifically do if there's gunfire in your courtroom, just for example? Anybody know? No, and I always say, yeah, duck. Brilliant. Awesome, you're done, you're excused, duck. Whoever said duck can leave. If you haven't trained on it, if you haven't talked about it, if you don't have a policy for it, there's a little reptilian part of our brain, the part that we always revert to when everything else fails and we don't have any other kind of training or experiential knowledge, which is a big way of learning, talking about learning, that tells us how to react. That little lizard part of our brain will do one of two things. It will either create panic, sheer unbridled panic, or you will freeze. Either of those two things in a dynamic, violent encounter are bad, generally speaking. All right, so what is risk? There's no attorneys in the room, none that will at least admit to being attorneys. Risk means that there is some exposure, either liability, legal exposure, personal exposure, risk of personal injury. What presents a risk to us? And by us, I'm talking about my target audience, clerks, internally, externally. Anybody here work with a bully? Don't raise your hands. Don't. Okay? It's okay. Answer silently in your head. Do I work with a bully? Have I ever worked with a bully? Does that make your life miserable when you go to work? Is that an internal risk to you? Is it impacting the quality of life, your quality of work, your quality of employment? Come on. Yeah, it probably is. Unless you're the bully, shame on you. Externally, we have knuckleheads coming into court all the time, right? How do I fill out the defensive driving? Oh my God, if I heard that one more time. I hear it in my sleep. I can recite it in my dreams. So who presents a risk to us? Again, visitors, defendants, witnesses, other city employees, i.e. the bullies, co-workers, other persons. I can tell you, I was a Rowlett City Marshal for about 5 years, and we had some public works guys that would come in basically just to stare at my court clerks until I got there. And then they would come stare at me once, and then we'd have a little chat, and they'd leave. That kind of crap is ridiculous. It creates what? If you're a manager, there's three words, actually, you don't ever want to hear in relation to your employees. Say it with me. Hostile work environment. You cannot allow a hostile work environment to occur because you have just introduced exposure. Just saying. So how do we identify risks? Prevent indicators. Personal stressor events can trigger interpersonal violence. Is going to court stressful? You bet. Come on, guys. We see people come to court all the time. They're angry. They're upset. It's costing them more money. Their insurance rates are going to go up. The tinfoil on the guy's head's got to be replaced before he can get more signals from the CIA. Whatever it is, it's upsetting them. So court's stressful. Stressful for them. It's stressful for you guys, too. If you work with people that are having issues in their lives, okay, personal stressor events, As a detective, you used to investigate homicides. When we talk about personal stressor events, we're usually talking about people who the sentence would end with, and then they turn the gun on themselves. Okay? A personal stressor event can be very serious.
This is where emotions and tempers run high. In Jacksonville, Florida, a defendant is on trial for murdering a boy. In a fit of rage, the murdered child's father dispenses his own form of justice. The victim's stepbrother assists in the attack. The father is charged with battery, and the defendant gets the death penalty. Defendant loses control. He attacks a prosecutor and is eventually tackled and restrained by five bailiffs. West Palm Beach, Florida. A convicted murderer is on trial for an attempted prison escape. His attorney is asked to sit apart from his client due to earlier verbal threats. The convict attacks his lawyer before officers can subdue him. After the hearing accusing him of stalking his girlfriend, this prisoner chooses an unexpected way of expressing his anger. He is controlled by pepper spray as the judge clears the courtroom.
No, pepper spray clears the courtroom. Trust me.
All right, check off.
Birmingham, Alabama. A defendant on trial for posting child pornography on the internet leaves the courtroom and uses his umbrella as a weapon to fend off an aggressive cameraman.
I've had people say, what's he got to do with court security? Because it's got an access port surrounding an area of curtilage. If I write a search warrant, it'd be the curtilage. Area surrounding the court. Are we responsible for parking lots, walkways, the sidewalks, the steps? You bet.
What the hell are you with?
Albuquerque, New Mexico. On hearing of his murder conviction, a defendant rushes a table of prosecutors.
Ladies and gentlemen, my jury deliberation.
Judge on Xanax. I've never seen Judge that call. Maybe like a disney animatronic judge.
He is wrestled to the ground before he can cause any serious harm. The horrified family of the victim looks on in disbelief. Here a defendant stands silently before a Massachusetts court as he is being charged with the murder of two Springfield women. The hearing looks like most pre-trial conferences, with attorneys talking to the judge about a trial date. But then suddenly, the victim's son attacks the accused murderer.
That guy, what a hero. Watch the foot store laying out his way so we can out his head. That's chivalrous. And if you're poor, just like an episode of Jerry Springer, you're in trouble.
The man jumps the con, who is handcuffed and in leg shackles.
Wait for it.
After withstanding a flurry of punches, his sister comes to his defense and starts to hit her brother's assailant. We can ultimately subdue disorderly convicts in court, but one thing we still can't control is the weather.
What?
They have nothing to lose.
Absolutely nothing. I just couldn't figure out how to get the darn VCR shut off. I have to make that comment every time. Like, everybody's all wrapped with attention. Deadly mudslide in the court? No, sorry guys, no deadly mudslide. Now, I will tell you a little quick story. Anybody watch reality television? And anybody who doesn't raise their hands is lying, because I know you all do. Some of you watch reality television, one or two of you, I'm sure. Okay, so one or two of you have seen that John Bunnell guy, right? Anybody used to watch Cops? Look, I got an 11-year-old son. When he was six, every Saturday night that I was actually at home, we would watch Cops, or I'd tape it and we'd watch, because my son thought that was the coolest thing in the world. John Bunnell used to be on Cops a lot. Anybody remember him? Yeah, here's some yeses, okay. I thought he was an okay guy. Met him at the FBI Academy. Turned out to be a complete and utter ass. Just saying. Who knew? Who knew? All right, so who comes to court? Hey, it's just Class C charges. What are we getting all worked up about? Just normal everyday folks come to municipal court, right? Nobody really bad comes to court. Oh, well, maybe. Who's that guy in the middle? Bingo, Timothy McVeigh. Why was Timothy McVeigh arrested? Traffic stop. Oh, that's very broad, very good, but let's narrow that down a little bit. What actually got him handcuffed? Two things, actually. His vehicle was lacking a front license plate registration. That's close. It's close. And he had an expired, actually driver's license, but that's close enough. Close enough. It's government work. What the heck? I'm going to save him for last because I grew up in Seattle, so we can talk about him. Who's that guy? Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, also known as the 44 caliber killer, claims his neighbor's black Labrador retriever ordered him to kill, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Pretty interesting case if you read the books. How did he get caught? Very good. More specifically, warrants issued for his arrest pursuant to the issuance of parking violations allowed the detectives to hold him in custody while they got enough evidence to charge him with the murders. Parking tickets. Hey, I was a detective for a long time. Crazier things. It's amazing, okay? Now, I won't call my favorite because that's not right, because nobody should be the favorite. But Mr. Bundy. Everybody knows who Ted Bundy is, right? Okay, I grew up in Seattle. I worked in the Seattle area law enforcement for 22 some odd years. One of my best friends was on the Ted Task Force back before they knew he was Ted, but how they knew the first name Ted was because somebody actually did survive. He actually managed to let one person get away. Now, what do we know about Ted? How many women is Ted officially credited with? Anybody know? About 38, I think, was the last number. I can tell you right now that my buddy on the Ted Task Force says well into the three figures. We'll never know. We'll never know. So, yeah, Ted was a particularly heinous guy. Just because I grew up there, and I actually got to work some old cold case files with those guys, I didn't put Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, because I could probably throw him up there too, because he actually got stopped a lot for like minor traffic violations and stuff. So, guys, these are one of the worst killers in history that were getting contacted by law enforcement for what are the equivalent of our Class Cs. If you take the attitude, and I've heard it from city managers, excuse me, I've heard it from police chiefs, I've heard it from judges, it's just municipal court. They're just Class Cs. Really? Really? They're just Class Cs. Right, because you know, nobody really bad ever drives without a license or insurance, right? So anytime I hear that, it makes my court security part of my head just want to explode. Woo, like our hair's on fire. Woo! We talked about that little reptilian part of your brain that, absent some training, will do one of two things. Well, if it switches over to flight mode, you'll look like your hair is on fire while you run away. Oftentimes, that does you no good. We're going to talk a little bit about, okay, so what happens? What, Rob, what if? What if? Now, to give me an hour, we can play what if for a really long time. So I'm going to go through some what if scenarios. Okay, before that, I want to talk to you something that will help you a little bit, because it's important when we talk about the scenarios. Anybody in here shoot firearms, handguns? Anybody in here been in law enforcement, reserve? God, you guys are, there we go. Thank you. Couple. Whew, I was going to say, you guys are a tough audience today, man. All right. Then you probably have heard, maybe you've heard about the color code, Cooper's color code. Okay, what that basically tells us is that white, it's mean you're just oblivious. You're just going through your day, diddy-bopping along, la-da-da-da-da-da. No environmental awareness whatsoever. No understanding what's going on around you, who's around you, what's around you, whether there's a threat nearby or not. Yellow is you're attentive, but it relaxed. It means you're aware of your environment. You're sensitive to who's around you, why they might be around you, what might be happening around you. Orange is now your focus. There's something that's occurred, somebody, something that's made you go from yellow to orange. It means now you're attenuated. You're focused on that individual situation. Red is there's an active threat or you've defined a threat. Black is actively fighting. Some people said black is panic. I'd like to actually teach people not to panic. And I do teach a lot of personal safety, personal security, as well as this stuff. And I always say, no, I'm never at a point where I'm going to tell you, give up, you're panicking, you're done. I don't teach that. I never will, never, and I won't. But if you're actively fighting, then you're in the black, because now it might be a life or death situation. So, we have an interpersonal violence in the courtroom. Threat, tension, stare down, mugging. Do anybody ever have any gang members come to your courts? No. Because they don't commit Class C violations, do they? Because they're real bad guys. Because they don't do that stuff, right? Oh, well, we did. And what would happen when you get rival gang members sitting a few rows apart from each other in court? Well, you can't not stare each other down and act like jackasses, because that's what they do. They're gang members. It's in the contract or something. Okay? So that just elevates the tension in the room. I can tell you right now that when I ran court security and I had my four bailiffs working for me, plus all my other people, where do we have the most problems? Which court? Juvenile. Juvenile court without a question. Always, because those kids have the least amount of ability to control what? Impulse and emotions, right? Most of them are just little bags of hormones and testosterone running around, you know, aimlessly, okay? So you get them in a court environment now where they're like BBs rattling around in a box, and something's bound to happen. Unfortunately, it usually would involve my bailiffs. All right, so, you know, tension builds. We want to deflate that tension before it becomes an issue. Now it becomes a fight in progress. Could be mutual combat. Could be an unprovoked assault. I had a crazy guy in a courtroom stand up and just cold cock a guy because he didn't like the color of his hair or something. I can't even remember now. Okay, so if you think that kind of stuff can't happen, I can find a situation somewhere where it probably has. And mutual combat. There were your two knuckleheads staring each other down, finally can't take it anymore, and the blows come right in the middle of court. That has happened. Probably happened in your courtroom too. How many of you have been trained? Anybody? Trained. And I don't just mean, hey, if the fight happens, duck under your desk, because that ain't training. It's not. I don't care what anybody says. How many of you have been trained in how to respond to an act of interpersonal violence in your courtroom? No one. I knew it. And it drives me nuts because I teach this stuff. And it's still, I've been doing it now for over 2 years for TMCEC. And I preach this, and I preach this, and I preach this. And with a very few exceptions, most of the courts that I've trained, okay, nobody's doing this stuff. Well, it's all well and good. Everybody goes to work and everybody's happy until the bad thing happens. And you're going, God, I should listen to Rob. Why didn't we call him? Why didn't we do some training? I don't know. Because you're cheap. Just saying. So now what happens when that assault isn't just mutual combat between two knucklehead gangbangers? What happens when it becomes an assault against your judge or your bailiffs? Oh, that gets a little more serious now, doesn't it? I can tell you if you're a judge or a bailiff, it's a hell of a lot more serious. Okay? Where I worked, my bailiffs were all retired guys. God bless them. They were good guys, but they were retired guys. Right? So how much fight was in them? One of them he was an old Dallas SWAT guy. He had a lot of fight in him. He scared me. He's one of those ones where I always thought he might just twist off and do something. But other than him, the other three guys were really, you know, they were in okay shape, but they were all in their 60s. Okay, so I always had that concern that, you know, we had tasers for him for a reason. Guys, don't fight tase. Don't fight tase. Don't fight tase. Tase, tase, tase. Tase early, tase often. Now, my judge, we used to have a bench before I got that sucker built up that was really low. Right? And if a guy that was really, how tall are you? 6'3"? Okay, if you're about, 6'3" or above, 6'2". I'm 6 foot exactly, and I could almost reach across and grab him. That happened one time. Guess what I got money to do next? Raise my bench. It's amazing how that works. Okay? Now, any person who makes a decision to engage, it's hot in here, isn't it? To engage in an act of interpersonal violence against another individual will go through a process called the OODA loop. I just like saying OODA because it sounds cool. OODA. OODA. OODA loop. Okay? But it does mean that we have an opportunity to intercept that thought process before violent acts can occur. Who thought this stuff up? Do you really care? United States Air Force. I can go into more depth. I can talk for a long time about the OODA loop. This was a big thing in SWAT for a long time in SWAT management. We thought the OODA loop was really cool. All right. It is kind of cool. It's a continuous recurring process of the mind that repeats throughout a fight. In order to react to a threat, your mind must go through a means of processing it. Here's what the components mean. Observe, orient, decide, and act. OODA. I can say it again. OODA. Okay, there we go. Observe, orient, decide, and act. I'm going to show you a video. Wake up. If you're asleep, I can't believe you can sleep in one of my classes, but go ahead, wake up. If anybody next to you is asleep, wake them up. Okay, we're going to watch a video. It's a good video. It's not as much fun as my other videos because it's got a little bit more serious. But I want you to look for the OODA loop on everybody you see on the screen and ask yourself if someone's OODA loop gets interrupted. No audio with this one. Sacramento County, California, it's courthouse, security checkpoint. It's a good day. I'll be working. Yes, he really did that, whoever said that. Yeah, he stood there and went. That was his OODA loop resetting. Observe, whoop, observe, whoop, observe, whoop. Well, look at this guy. I'm going as fast as I can. He's one of my retired bailiffs. And then this guy who slides on the slip. Whoa! See, that would have been me. I'd have fallen and would have been on YouTube forever. Okay. You guys see an OODA loop problem in there? Who was it with? It's with one of our officers. Okay? Because, hey, I'm retired. I'm working this great gravy court security gig. Man, I don't have to go to barking dogs or domestic violence situations or deal with drunks and cars or puked on themselves. This is great. What a wonderful job. No one's going to try and hurt me here. Wrong. Okay? What do we know in instances where officers are disarmed with their own weapons? What happens? Somebody dies. 98% of the time, it's the officer. And then usually somebody else. Anybody remember what happened in Atlanta a few years ago when we had a convict going to court, overpower his lone female guard, who, by the way, was 5'2" and 140 pounds. He was 6'2" and about 245. Okay, when he disarmed her, he didn't kill her. Not sure why. Good day to be her, I suppose. Locks her in the broom closet, takes her Glock and a couple spare magazines and decides to kill a judge, kill a court clerk, kill one police officer on the way out, and kill another deputy on the run. Then he killed a federal agent while he was on the run again. Okay, so this stuff is serious. So we know if you're disarmed, it's going to end poorly. 2% of the time, we might hit that lottery and it might not end so poorly. 98% of the time, bad juju. Okay. So, boom. That is a felony assault. It's an attempted use of deadly force because if he loses the gun, we know that 90% of the time statistically he's going to kill someone. So what's the best course of action there? Bingo! Score. Who said that? That had to be you. My brother. Come here, man. Come here, man. Yeah. Dude. Yes! And I always look at this and I tell people, you know, this 12 years in SWAT, couple of shootings, makes me sound really bad. I'm that guy. I don't go whoop, whoop, like those little birds dipping in the water. I go bang, and that threat's over. Then it's clean up on aisle 9. And that sounds horrible. And it is, guys, it is. We don't take law enforcement, we don't take that kind of thing lightly. That's a very serious application of force. But I'm saving my brother's life, and more importantly, what happened in Atlanta? 5 people died because somebody couldn't control their firearm. I'm not going to be part of that, okay? That's my job. That's why they give me the freaking gun in the first place, right? Because there's an expectation that sometime you might have to use it. Otherwise, here's a gun, but you don't need any bullets because you're never really going to have to use it. Shh. Other potential attacks in court. I'm just kidding. Just to make sure you all are awake. Y'all are into zombie literature. Come on. All right. Read Max Brooks' book. It's spectacular. I love it. I got one of these. I brought one of these into court. This is when my court clerks decided that I was really insane and needed to go, clearly. Because I was all deadly serious, hanging it up on the wall. What's that? It's our zombie attack kit. What? Yeah. Rob, are you okay? I'm fine, but we're well prepared. All right. How many of you guys have in custody people in your courtrooms? Hey, I'm telling you right now, that is the largest growing trend of violence in courtrooms right now is when you have to move persons in custody from a jail or a controlled environment through a non-controlled environment into a courtroom, which, trust me, is not a controlled environment. At best, it's a semi-controlled environment, right? So anytime we're moving prisoners, it's high risk. I've gotten to the point now where I teach high-risk prisoner movement. We're talking about, you know, homicide suspects and rape suspects, serial criminals. I've gotten to the point now where anybody, you know what, we just treat them all the same. You know, I shoplifted at Walmart. Ankle brace, ankle chains. Belly chain, let's go. Weapons in the courtroom. How many of you have magnetometers? Magnetometers, you know. Oh, man, come on. You know, you walk, beep, the airport, magnetometers, screeners, whatever. I'm sorry, I've been in this damn business too long. I can't think of any other than magnetometers, what I know what it means. Pass-through metal detector. How many of you have them? Thank God, you should all have them. Ah! Why don't you have them? Rob stomps foot. Because you're cheap. Because you're cheap. Why don't you engage in more training? Because you're cheap. Yes, because you're cheap. And hey, is your life worth more than a $3,500 metal detector? Mine is. I'm just saying. Okay? Find the money. How many of you guys have court security funds? Most of you do. Some of you got them and probably don't even know you got them. Spend them. $3,500 will buy you a state-of-the-art Garrett pass-through magnetometer, like the ones they use at the airport, maybe even better. A couple of hand wands, life is good. I know, because I've talked to y'all, some of you are in this room, maybe not, but I know there's a lot of courts in Texas that have nothing, nothing. No wands, no magnetometers, nothing. God, that scares the hell out of me. All I can say is, God bless, good luck. You know, talk to me later. Get a little voodoo prayer thing going for you. I don't know. I don't know what else to do. But, and I didn't bring any because I always say I'm going to do this. I always say, when I say I'm going to fly with some of these knives that aren't supposed to be able to get picked up by the magnetometer, it'll be just my luck. They'll have one of those full body scans, and they'll be like, I'll be in federal custody calling, you know, Hope. Hope, I can't teach today. I'm in federal custody. I was trying to bring some ceramic knives on the plane, and wow, who the hell knew? Who knew? Guns do make it into courtrooms. Knives make it into courtrooms. Well-meaning bailiffs, even with magnetometers, get distracted, get screwed up. If somebody badly enough wants to get a weapon into a courtroom, just like if somebody badly enough wants to kill somebody, you know, all the Secret Service in the world isn't going to stop somebody from killing somebody if they really want to do it. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it's a homicide detective, just telling you. So if somebody really wants to get a weapon in a courtroom, they can. That's why bailiffs have guns and vests. Radios and shoes in their feet so they can run really fast. All right. July 1992, the shot heard around Texas had changed the way we look at court security. Prelude to this, how many of you have attorneys that come into your courtrooms? I'm thinking everybody. Why aren't you all raising your hands? Okay. How many of you require your attorneys to be screened? Almost no one. Why? Because you're cheap. I know. You've told me. Okay. If you're not screening your attorneys, why? They're not that special. They might tell you they are. They're not that special. Trust me. I know a bunch. Shh. Little secret. George Lott was an attorney. He wasn't special either. Okay? He opened fire in a Tarrant County courtroom in 1992, killed an assistant DA, Chris Marshall, another attorney, John Edwards, a judge, Clyde Ashworth, John Hill, another DA, assistant DA, were all wounded. Okay? That's why attorneys get screened. And I had had attorneys throw major hissy fits in my courtroom because I made my bailiff screen them. I didn't care then. I wouldn't care now. I don't care. Yes, and having their briefcases searched, having their books checked, having any bags they carry searched, and having their coats wanted if they don't want to take them off. And if they don't like it, there's the door. Kind of like me. There's the door. You don't like my class? By all means, you're free to leave at any moment in time. Because last time I checked, you weren't paying to be here. So, and Lord knows I ain't getting anything for it, so what the heck. So yes, you got to screen attorneys. Why? Because they're human beings. Like any other human being, there's a bad apple in every bunch, isn't there? George Lott was a bad apple. I know plenty of great attorneys. Well, no, I know one or two great attorneys. I know plenty of other attorneys, okay? But you can't let them in without being screened just because they happen to be attorneys. Oh, I know. You're running out of time. So this is top secret video that I'm allowed to release now of the testing of special bullet-resistant glass. I know the economy's bad, but I don't want her freaking job for nothing. I almost dropped an F-bomb there. I almost did. I don't want her... Can you see this conversation over the dinner table? Oh, come on, honey. It's perfectly safe. Have you ever seen... Who's got bullet-resistant glass? Oh, God, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Yeah, all right. Somebody's got bullet-resistant glass. Okay. It's really thick and really heavy. So I'm thinking this gal's in damn good shape back then, because that crap, you can't hold that stuff up for very freaking long. Especially if you got 45 caliber Thompson rounds hitting it. Yeah, a buddy of mine sent that to me, goes, you might find this interesting. Heck yeah. Anyways, all right. Shots fired to courtroom, shots fired to adjacent area. Guys, I got an hour. I'm not here to train you how to respond. We're talking about basic ideas around court security. If you want to put on training, by all means, contact me. We'll talk about it, because I think you need it. I think everybody needs it. Okay? Training is what I do for a living now. So, you know, it's kind of important to me for a variety of things. I like to eat. I like to make my house payments. But on top of that, I don't like it when people that I have trained or talked to find themselves in situations that they go, God, I wish I'd listened to Rob. I wish we'd done some training. Okay? When you're hiding under your desk is not the time to be thinking that. Okay?
The camera set up just behind the metal detector captured every moment of the shooting. At 1:28 p.m., to the left of the screen, you can see Maribel Estrada and her son David Arroyo Jr. approach the courthouse steps. In the upper right corner, you see the gunman, David Arroyo Sr., shoot. Maribel and her son fall to the ground. Seconds later, Smith County Deputy Sherman Dollison exits the courthouse with his gun drawn. He fires at Arroyo Sr. several times before he himself is hit and falls to the ground. All the windows in the back entrance have been shot out. At this point on the tape, you can't see it, but Arroyo heads back to his car. That's when Mark Wilson fires at Arroyo. Arroyo shoots back and kills Mark. Smith County Sheriff Department's Lieutenant Marlon Sewell and Mike Strickland and Tyler PD Detective Clay Parrott begin to fire at Arroyo as he continues to spray the courthouse with bullets. Sewell is grazed across the neck by a bullet and falls. Then Parrott's head is grazed. Arroyo heads back to his car, and you can see Arroyo's maroon truck pull away as officers continue to fire at him. He continues to return fire. Lieutenant Sewell is back up on his feet and runs outside firing at Arroyo with others as he drives away.
Really crappy day in court. Now, anybody know where that's at? It's Tyler, Texas. Don't tell me it can't happen in your court. It's Tyler freaking Texas. Anybody been to Tyler? Nice little town. How many of you guys think that somebody would open fire with an assault rifle in front of a freaking court in Tyler, Texas? So you go, well, my court's small. So is Tyler. If you don't think it can happen to you, that is the worst kind of apathy, is to start thinking it can't happen to you. Okay? Because it can. Right? Now, in that case, lost an officer. Bad guy ended up getting killed. All right? That's always a good thing. Sorry, folks. 27, 28 years in law enforcement. Bad guys that shoot at cops that get killed subsequently, that's a good thing. Looking at that, what could they have done differently? Well, you know, it's funny, though. Yes and no. If you have shot a handgun, I can tell you right now, as a guy who spent a lot of time shooting handguns, spent 12 years in SWAT, it's really hard to be accurate with a handgun all the time. It's really hard under real-life stress. It's great when you're standing at the line going, ka-ping, 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 ka-ping. This is great. Yeah, and then when people are actually shooting at you, you're running and hiding and rolling and going, because you can't breathe, and then trying to shoot back, holy crap, it's a whole different ball game. I had a really nice old lady, she was like one of the oldest people I've ever had in class, look at me and go, well, they just weren't very well prepared. And I said, man, let me tell you a real quick story. I'll tell you guys the same story. Old sheriff walks into a cafe, sits down, lady sitting next to him looks down, sees he's got a cock and lock 45 in his holster, which, you know, a lot of old country sheriffs used to carry those. She said, sheriff, you must be expecting trouble. I see you're carrying your gun. He said, no, ma'am, if I were expecting trouble, I'd have brought my rifle. If they'd have been expecting that, they'd have had rifles. How many citizens are going to put up with guys standing with rifles at the entrance to your courts. Ain't going to happen in any courts that I'm aware of. But that was the only way to adequately respond to being attacked with an assault rifle, is to respond likewise. Well, they didn't have it. So, all right, let's lighten things up a little bit now. Be very, very quiet, because this guy was hunting attorneys. All right, I don't have the video. I wish I did. If anybody ever finds the video, email it to me. Okay. Now, we can laugh because no attorneys were hurt in the filming of that video. Okay. He actually was able to do the Wascally Wabbit thing and jump around the tree while the guy shot and kept missing him. And now, he's fine. He's just freaking exhausted and freaked out. Okay. Now, what's this got to do with court security? Where did this happen? Immediately outside the courthouse. Again, in California. I won't get to tell you about California. Okay. But, again, court security doesn't end at the doors to the court. Hey, it sounds silly. Okay, until you're the person who's got the nutcase grabbing her in the courtroom, sticking a ballpoint pen against her neck, then it doesn't sound so silly, does it? Hey, once again, you can say, it never happened. Unfortunately, though, it has. It has. So once again, these are things that you need to think about. I'm not in here today to try and give you all the answers, but I'm trying to make you think. And I'm running out of time. All right, bomb threats. Everybody's pretty good about taking care of bomb threats. Holy crap, what about all this stuff? Well, how much of this is going to happen in Texas? Well, some of it. Now, the lone idiot scenario, again, California. What is it about California? Don't know. That's the lone idiot scenario. What happened in California is this guy took a tractor-trailer rig, thank God he did it in the middle of the night, right, and drove it into the courthouse. Boom. Because he was one seriously pissed off, upset, misdirected dude. Okay? So, here's the good news. Look at the fire. This thing was full of diesel gas. He had the tanks full. Hey, thank God that wasn't while business was being conducted, because it would have been a disaster, right? That's the hand of God. You can say what you want. It's like Columbine. If that propane bomb had blown up, there would have been 500-600 kids dead at Columbine. It didn't blow up because they used the wrong timer. This guy, some little voice of God talked to him and said, don't run into the courthouse in the middle of the day, do it in the middle of the night. You can say whatever you like. I like to think God had a little hand in that. All right, so let's talk about what you can do. Mitigation of risk. Oh, my God, you're talking about all these horrible things that can happen. I can't stand in front of an 18-wheeler that's going to crash into my court. No, you can't. You're right. But what can you do to mitigate some risk? Train. Be mentally prepared. Be physically prepared. Understand the physiology of fright. Don't get me wrong. I'm not asking you all to enroll in gyms and become, you know, 10th-degree black belts in some obscure martial arts. But realize that if you're coming to work hungover or tired or whatever, that you're not adequately prepared. Cindy, if I had cops that worked for me that came to work hungover or tired or just straggling, send them home. Go. You're not fit to be here. Hey, understand fright. Understand what is going to happen to you physiologically when you're really scared. Some of you probably haven't been really scared in a long time. I can tell you it sucks. Okay, but how you respond to it can make a difference between whether you're injured or worse, whether you survive. Okay, survival doesn't stop when the critical incident is over. Horrific images, I know. I don't show them to you lightly, because if you're involved in a critical incident and someone is injured or worse, killed, and you're witness to it, it is going to impact you. And if your organization does nothing to support that person, shame on that organization, because stress is real. Okay, stress is real. I've watched it destroy careers. I've watched cops melt down because they didn't get help. I've watched civilians like dispatchers and records clerks melt down because they were party or saw something or were involved in something and nobody thought they needed help. So if you're in a courtroom and something dynamic, some violent criminal act happens in your presence, be honest about whether or not you need help. Okay? We know, because we've been being the macho, I almost dropped one, we've been being the macho guys for years. Well, we don't need any help. It's okay. No, we know. You know what? 100% of cops have nightmares. We have sleep deprivation issues. When I teach academy classes, I tell them, if you haven't had nightmares yet, you will, because we know it's going to happen. So understand that dynamic, too. Okay, have critical incident debriefings. Physical mental recovery is important. Post-traumatic stress is real. I know I'm running out of time. Why do things go wrong? Because you're cheap.
Another dangerous game kids play is to tunnel in snowbanks near the road. A few years ago, one boy
I can show that because he laughs at the end, but it's not mean-spirited. I've seen that 1,000 times. I still laugh. Why do things go right? Because competent people have learned. They've listened, they've learned, and they're not cheap. Okay? All right? Things go wrong, you can usually look to pre-incident preparation. When things go right, who notices? Guys, things go right every day, don't they? Be proud of that. Be proud of the fact that you run your courts well and that things go right every day. Because I guarantee you, nobody takes notice of the fact when things go right every day, do they? But let things go wrong one day, and who notices? Everybody freaking notices. And usually it can have a negative impact on you and your career, too. Okay, positive steps to take. Review or audit your emergency management, risk management response. Talk to people who have the authority to make changes. Talk to them. Demand if you have to. I mean, get anybody in trouble, okay? But this is your workplace. It's your work environment. You're going to spend 8, 10, 12 hours of your day, 3, 4, 5 days a week of your life there. I maintain that your employer has an obligation, a moral obligation, to create a safe environment for you to work in and for citizens to come to court in. Train. Train, train, train. Train, train, train. Don't be cheap. That simple. It's not hard and it's not expensive. And yet I still don't get people doing it. High frequency, low duration training means I could take half an hour. Half an hour. I take 30 minutes out of your day, a couple times a quarter, or even out of 6 months. Give me 2 30-minute sessions in a 6-month period of time, and I'll make you much better prepared to respond to a dynamic critical incident when it occurs, as opposed to going and just running out of the room. Or worse, diving under your desk and freezing. Because neither one of those is doing us any damn good most of the time.
Hey, that's a big help for a day.
Jeez, I'm affordable, but I'm not cheap.
Come on. Sounds like fun.
Whoa. Where are you going?
Where are you going at?
Come on, we have some paperwork to do.
Right with you. You can lose a hat.
I like the hat.
Can you fix my bike?
Done that one.
You don't get a copy. You get, it's four
Which
copies.
Which one's hers?
She gets the third. Read the copies.
Oh, you ready?
There's a baby coming out of there.
I understand that. She's going to have to deliver. She's going to have to deliver?
Stay in there. Stay in there.
There's a robbery in progress inside this door.
You want me to go in there?
Yeah.
What if they have guns?
You have your vest, right?
I'll stay in the car.
The car?
They quit.
How'd you like it if we quit?
I wouldn't. Can you take me home now?
Mr. Wizard, I don't want to be cop anymore. Okay, that's just one last little funny to leave you with. And if you're offended by that, again, there's the door because we're almost done. Okay. That's one. Woo!
When I told the folks back home that I was coming to Dr. Mochty, they said, "Wear the fox hat."
All right, thank you for your time and attention. Totally unnecessary and gratuitous pictures of my kids, which I know I need to update, but there you go. Okay, that's me. That's the company I work for now. That's my company. That's how to get a hold of me. Quit being cheap. You're excused. Thank you. Be safe. My website's not quite up and running yet, but it's getting there.
Okay, we're going to do a quick 10-minute break. Can you hear me?
Take a 10-minute break, find a place of refrigeration, and stay there.